I never imagined I'd witness the death of a world, let alone my own. Not like this. Not in fire and terror delivered by those sworn to protect us. But here I am, one insignificant soul among billions, watching the end of everything I've ever known. This is how it feels when Exterminatus comes, when the Emperor's final sanction is carried out on a planet full of people who once believed themselves citizens of his glorious Imperium. It begins quietly, almost mundanely, as most disasters do. In the teeming hive city I call home, every day is a struggle and every moment a cacophony of human life. We live stacked in colossal metal hives that scrape the toxic sky, each hive a sprawling vertical city housing untold billions. My hive, the name hardly matters now, was a typical one by Imperial standards, ancient, towering, and utterly consuming. I was born on one of its mid-levels and likely would have died there of old age or industrial accident, having never set foot outside its iron walls, if fate hadn't decided to be particularly cruel. Life on a hive world is not really life as most would think of it. It's existence, it's routine. You wake to the klaxon of the shift siren echoing through the hab-block corridors. You gulp recycled air that tastes of metal and sweat. You eat your ration of corpse starch food made from the processed flesh of the dead, though we try not to think about that, and then you march off to your designated labor. In my case, that was the manufacturum line, assembling last battery components for the Imperial Guard's never-ending wars. Day in, day out, bolting and welding by the glow of ancient lumen strips. The work is monotonous and unending, but it's all I've ever known. All any of us hive dwellers know is service and survival. I've never seen the sky. Not the real sky, blue or clear. Here it's permanent twilight, the air polluted by millennia of industry and the smog of billions of churning lungs. On rare occasions when I looked up past the upper hive spires, I could make out a dull reddish haze beyond the towering smokestacks. Some said that was the sun, but who could be sure? The hive provides its own sickly illumination, and we reconcile with that. I always thought the world outside the hive was uninhabitable ash wastes anyway, so what did it matter? Everything that mattered was inside these walls. Our lives, our work, our emperor, at least the shrines and the idea of him. We lived packed in our little cells like vermin in a canister. My hab unit was a 3x3 meter chamber with a cot and a picked slate that spouted imperial creeds on endless repeat. It wasn't much, but I called it home for decades. Through the thin plastic walls, I could hear my neighbors arguing or praying at any given hour. Privacy was a luxury none of us had. If the noise of humanity wasn't keeping you awake, then it was the mechanical thrum of the air recyclers or the distant grinding of the hive's great engines. The hive is alive in its own way, an ancient metal giant with a billion tiny hearts beating inside. We just happen to be the blood that circulates through its veins, keeping it alive with our toil and our lives. In those days, before everything, my concerns were petty and ordinary. Would my ration credits stretch until next distribution? Would the manufactorum overseer dock our pay if we missed quota again? Would I catch sump flu from the chemical drips leaking through my hab ceiling? Trivial worries of a trivial life, in hindsight. I sometimes entertained romantic notions that perhaps I'd enlist in the guard and see the stars, or maybe get transferred to an administratum desk job if I were lucky. Pipe dreams. In the Imperium, you are what you were born to be, and I was born a hive laborer. And in truth, I was content enough with that lot. At least I was alive. I had a purpose, and the Emperor watched over us all, or so the preacher said. The Imperial Creed was a constant presence, Loudspeakers mounted in every corridor and market square would crackle with hymns at dawn and dusk shift. The local ministorum priest would come on the vox, leading us in the daily prayer. The emperor protects. We all droned along, half asleep, trusting in those words even as we coughed up black phlegm from the polluted air. I won't lie. My faith was perfunctory. Like most around me, I said the prayers because that's what one does. True belief, hard to cultivate when life is a day-to-day misery. Still, we clung to the idea that the God Emperor cared, that all our sacrifices and suffering meant something in his grand design. It was a comforting lie to get us through another 18-hour work shift. I mention all this so you understand what normal looked like before the end. Before the whispers of heresy began circulating through the hive like a toxin in the air. If you had asked me then what could possibly threaten our titanic city or planet, I would have shrugged. We were just one insignificant hive world among thousands, but we were productive and loyal insofar as anyone bothered to measure such things. There hadn't been a war here in living memory. Not even a serious uprising since my grandparents' time, when a food riot in the lower levels got quelled by the Adeptus Arbites in a single bloody day. People like us don't rebel. We're too busy trying to stay alive. At least, that's what I believed. Yet it was precisely people like us who did rebel in the end, or rather gave themselves to something that ensured none of us would survive. I remember the first sign of trouble so clearly. It was a few months ago, though exact time has become a blur during second shift. I was at my station on the assembly line when a scream echoed from somewhere down the gantry. At first, no one reacted. Isolated screams aren't uncommon in the manufactorum. Industrial accidents happen. Someone loses a hand in a press or gets acid splashed. Tragic, but routine. But this was different. The scream was unnatural. It warbled through the air, rising in pitch to a shriek that cut through the machinery's drone. We all stopped working, one by one, the silence of hundreds of workers gradually overpowering the clanging of metal. Overseer Krall stormed down the line, furious at the interruption. I craned my neck to see what was happening. There was commotion near one of the loading bays. Workers were backing away, forming a circle around something. I caught a glimpse of a man convulsing on the ground. It was Jaren, a conveyor belt tech from my hab block. He was thrashing and frothing at the mouth, eyes rolled back white. I thought he was having a seizure from the heat or fumes. Then I saw the other workers making the sign of the Aquila and stumbling away in terror. That's when I noticed Jaren's body changing. To this day, I struggle to describe it. His limbs were twisting in on themselves, cracking bones, stretching unnaturally. His fingers elongated into claws, his face contorted, teeth sharpening into fangs. This wasn't a seizure or poisoning. It was possession. Emperor, save us. Though he did not. In seconds, the man who had shared drinks with me only a week prior was gone, replaced by a monstrosity of muscle and sinew, curled in a fetal position on the floor. Then it opened its eyes. Emperor, those eyes! And unleashed a howl that no human throat could ever produce. Panic erupted. We scrambled back as the thing, I won't call it Jaren anymore, lunged with spidery limbs, grabbing the overseer. Poor Krall didn't even have time to draw his sidearm before claws as sharp as industrial shears tore him open from belly to throat. I remember the hot spray of blood across my face, the shock of red on so many soot-stained gray uniforms. The workers nearest the creature started running, screaming. A few tried to fight, one swung a metal bar at it, others threw rivet tools. But it was useless. The thing swatted them aside like children. I don't know why I didn't run immediately. I stood transfixed by horror, watching this nightmare unfold. My mind refused to accept it. Demon, my brain finally supplied. The word from old legends and forbidden whispers. A creature of chaos, here, in our manufactorum. It felt impossible, but I couldn't deny the evidence currently goring people right in front of me. At last, self-preservation kicked in. I turned and bolted, nearly slipping on the blood-slick floor. Around me was bedlam. Hundreds of workers stampeding through the aisles. The emergency klaxon began blaring, a deep, grinding horn I'd only heard in drills. "Security to Line 6, code Ultra Green," a Voxcaster blared overhead. An automated alert, likely, because no one in their right mind would calmly stick around to announce it in person. I squeezed into a maintenance tunnel to escape the crush of bodies. The last thing I saw over my shoulder, the Arbites response team, the Hive's armored law enforcers, had arrived with shock shields and shock mauls crackling. There were six of them in black carapace armor, barking orders for everyone to stand down, as if we were the threat. They moved in a practiced formation toward the thing that had been Jaran. I didn't stay to watch. I doubt any of them survived anyway. We heard gunfire and screams echoing behind us as we fled into the depths of the Hive. That day changed everything. One moment, we were cogs in the great Imperial machine. The next, we were prey in a nightmare. Word spread quickly, as it always does in the underbelly of a Hive. By the time I made it back to my hab block, people were already trading wild rumors about demons in the manufactorum, about secret heretic cults and witchcraft. I did my best to keep my head down and hide in my quarters, wiping Jaren's dried blood from my face with trembling hands. I remember I kept murmuring the Emperor's Prayer under my breath like a mantra, as if it could undo what I saw. The Emperor protects. The Emperor protects. If he was listening, he gave no answer. In the days that followed, the Hive seemed to teeter on the brink of insanity. The Arbites imposed a lockdown on the manufactorum levels, and the Magistratum, the regular enforcers, enforced curfews at gunpoint. Yet the violence only spread. Isolated incidents, at first. A sanitation crew found butchered in a maintenance shaft with strange symbols painted in their blood on the bulkheads. A Hab chapel congregation that tore each other apart during morning prayers. The stories were unbelievable, except I did believe them, because I'd seen what happened to Jaran. I started noticing symbols scrawled in odd places around our district. Crude, eight-pointed stars drawn in red or black. They'd be painted on alley walls, or etched into a Hab door, appearing overnight. Gang tags, I thought at first, or graffiti. But no, these were Chaos marks, the Star of Chaos, though I only learned that name later. At the time, I just knew it was something forbidden, something that made my skin crawl to look at. Everywhere, people were afraid. Some reacted with piety. Crowds packed the temples to beg the Emperor for salvation. Others reacted with fury. Mobs formed, accusing anyone strange of being a heretic. I saw one poor man beaten to death by a panicked crowd in the market because he had a mutation on his arm, a little tentacle-like growth. He'd had it since birth, a minor mutation that the Administratum tolerated because he was still useful on the assembly line. But in the hysteria, none of that mattered. They crushed his skull with a masonry brick while chanting, "Purge the heretic!" It was utter madness, but who could stop it? The Arbiters were spread thin, and cult activity was erupting everywhere at once. Looking back, the cult, or cults, had been growing in the shadows for Emperor knows how long. Years, maybe decades. We were all too busy or blind to notice. They festered in the Underhive and even among discontented workers, like rot beneath floorboards. The Hive was a powder keg of misery and resentment. Chaos was the spark. A demagogue with a promise of change or revenge, a taste of forbidden power. That's all it takes to seduce desperate people. And in a place like this, there were plenty of desperate souls. I suspect the creature that Jaren became was summoned by someone. A cult ritual gone out of control, perhaps, or intentionally unleashed to sow terror. Because terror certainly spread. Each day got worse. Entire sections of the lower hive went dark, taken over by roving gangs of cultists who daubed their profane symbols and butchered anyone still loyal to the Imperium. The upper hive, where the nobility and planetary governor lived, sealed itself off early on, locking the transit lifts and blast doors. They left the rest of us to fend for ourselves while they cowered behind gilded plasteel barriers. I don't blame them. If I had a fortress to hide in, I might have done the same. But it bred a bitter taste in my mouth. We had always been expendable cogs. I knew that intellectually. Still watching the Skybridge gates clang shut, separating the haves from us have-nots, as chaos and death spread below, it made the truth terribly clear. We, the masses, meant nothing. We were on our own. The Astra Militarum Garrison, our planetary defense force, locally recruited soldiers, tried to contain the heresy at first. I would catch glimpses of them moving in squads through the habstacks, last guns at the ready, their sergeants yelling for people to stay indoors. For a moment, seeing those olive-drab uniforms and the Aquila on their flak armor, I felt a surge of hope. The Guard was here. They'd sort this out, right? They fought aliens and traitors on 1,000 worlds. Surely they could handle a bunch of cultists in one city. Reality was less reassuring. Many of those troopers were just as scared as we were. This wasn't a straightforward battle against orcs or rebels where you can see your enemy. This was insidious. Anyone could be a cultist, a neighbor, a friend. And how do you fight demons manifesting out of thin air? I saw what happened when one squad of PDF soldiers cornered some cultists by a hab junction. There were maybe a dozen cultists, ragged clothes, eyes full of feverish zeal, armed with makeshift weapons and a few stolen guns. The squad opened fire, cutting several down. For a moment, it looked like the professionals would easily rout these fanatics. Then one cultist, a woman in tattered red robes, stepped forward into the hail of las fire, seemingly oblivious to the wounds. She was chanting something loud and guttural. The air around her shimmered. I was peeking from a doorway, and I swear I felt a pressure in my skull as she spoke those unholy words. The guardsmen started screaming, clutching their helmets. Some dropped their weapons and writhed in agony. Blood poured from the eyes and noses of a couple of them, their brains bursting like overripe fruit from the witch's curse. Emperor's mercy. The survivors panicked and ran. The cultists fell upon those who were paralyzed, finishing them with cleavers and rusted blades. I ducked back, heart pounding. The street stank of burnt ozone, spilled blood, and something foul I couldn't name, like the scent of fear made manifest. When I dared look again, the cultists were gone, vanished into the ducts, leaving only butchered soldiers behind. That was happening all over the hive, I later learned. The guard, the enforcers, they were being overwhelmed. It took only a matter of weeks for our hive, our planet, to become a war zone. A slow, creeping war at first, then an all-out eruption. The heretics, emboldened by each small victory, surged upward from the depths. I heard that in the lowest sump sectors, entire manufactorum worker populations turned on their overseers at the behest of cult prophets. Some pledged themselves to the Blood God, rampaging in frenzied mobs that hacked apart any authority figure they could find. Others gave themselves to the Plague Lord. There were reports of a sickness sweeping some districts, people's flesh rotting while they still walked. I thank the throne I never saw those up close. Meanwhile, the pious folk of the hive tried to form their own militias or barricade their habs. Piety wasn't enough to stop berserkers, or worse. Every day, the sound of gunfire and explosions grew louder. Smoke rose from the lower levels, a haze of burning promethium and charred flesh. The hive's spire was literally under siege from below. I even heard, though I cannot confirm, that a greater demon briefly manifested in the main plaza of the Administratum Quarter, a towering horror of horns and shadow that took an entire company of Tempestus Scions and the last dozen Arbites judges to bring down. How true that is, or if it's just rumor, I don't know. But given what I'd seen, I could believe it. We common citizens were caught in the middle of all this, just trying to survive the crossfire and the nightmares let loose. I banded together with a few of my neighbors after our hab block was partly collapsed in a riot. Misery loves company, and there was some safety in numbers. By then, I'd gotten hold of a weapon, a battered autogun pried from the hands of a dead enforcer in an alley. I'd never shot anything living before, but now, every shadow might hide a cultist or something worse. We barricaded ourselves in a storage cellar for a couple of nights, while above us we heard the thump of boots and occasional shrieks. One of my companions, an old woman named Sanette, tried to keep us calm by reciting passages from the Imperial Creed, but even she laced her prayers with bitterness. "The Emperor protects," she sighed, "but why are we left to the wolves?" None of us had an answer. As the days dragged on, despair set in. The planetary authorities, Governor, PDF Command, fell silent. No one heard from the Governor after the first week. Some said he evacuated off-world at the first sign of chaos. Others claimed an Inquisitor arrived and executed him for incompetence. Either way, leadership was effectively gone. We were on our own, at the mercy of maddened traitors and warp-spawned horrors. When you realize your masters have abandoned you, something in you either breaks or hardens. For me, maybe a bit of both. I started to feel a detached numbness, even as atrocities unfolded around me. Perhaps it was shock or simply exhaustion, but after so many days of fear, my mind just pulled away. I'd step over corpses in the hallway without a flicker of emotion, whereas before I might have retched. When our little group of survivors would scavenge for food, passing charred bodies or walls slick with blood, I'd catch myself observing it, like it was all unreal, a hollow drama or a bad dream I was watching from outside my own body. This can't be my life, I would think. This isn't happening. But it was, relentlessly. Despite the numbness, a quiet anger also grew in me, not just at the cultists. Emperor, I hated them with every fiber for what they'd done to our home, but also at the Imperium itself. All my life I had been loyal, dutiful. We all had. And yet where was the Imperium when we needed it most? We were taught to trust in the Emperor's might, his armies, his angels. But no angels came, no space marines descending in glorious drop pods to save the day. There were rumors a single squad of Astartes did pass through to assassinate a cult demagogue in the Underhive. But even if that's true, they were gone as quickly as they arrived. I never saw them. Instead, our supposed saviors in orbit delivered something else. I recall the moment I realized there would be no rescue, only retribution. It was perhaps 4 or 5 days since the chaos first bared its fangs, though it felt like a lifetime. We were holed up in an old transit station near Mid-Hive, trying to rest. Outside, the battle for the city raged, but in our little corner it was eerily quiet for a few hours. Then a Vox unit someone had carried with us crackled to life. At first, it was just static. We assumed the device was dead or jammed, but through the crackle came a stern, authoritative voice, an off-world accent, clipped and formal. "This is Inquisitor Mavrin of the Ordo Hereticus, acting authority on this world," it said. All of us in the station froze, listening. An Inquisitor, By the throne, that's how dire things had gotten. By warrant of the God Emperor of Mankind and the Holy Ordos, I hereby declare this planet's population excommunicate traitorous. The penalty is death. Let this transmission serve as both warning and benediction. May the Emperor have mercy on your souls. Exterminatus is imminent. I felt my heart stop, literally for a beat. It just stopped. Surely I had misheard. But the others looked ashen, eyes wide. They heard it too. A woman among us began sobbing softly, repeating, "No, no, no," as if denial could change it. Exterminatus. The word we feared, the word we hoped was just a myth. But deep down, any Imperial citizen knows it can happen. I'd heard whispers of it long ago. Tales of planets in distant sectors purged entirely because of a virus outbreak or a daemonic incursion that couldn't be contained. I never thought I'd experience it firsthand. It is the ultimate sanction, a death sentence passed not just on the guilty, but on everyone unlucky enough to be there. Men, women, children, all of us condemned collectively. Because on an irredeemably corrupted world, no one is innocent enough to be spared, or so the Inquisition's logic goes. For a moment, rage bubbled up in me. So that was it, the Imperium's grand solution. If you can't save it, scour it clean. Burn the hive, burn the world, leave nothing but ashes so the infection does not spread. I understood the reasoning, I truly did. A throne, damn it. We were human beings down here. We weren't all cultists or traitors. Most of us were just victims, caught in something far larger than we could control. And now we were being written off, sacrificed on the altar of the greater good of the Imperium. 10 billion lives for the safety of trillions more. I suppose that's the equation. I wanted to scream at that vox, to plead, to curse that cold inquisitor and every lofty lord who had abandoned us to this fate. But what would be the point? If an inquisitor had made the call, it was over. There is no appealing that verdict. Some of the folks with me reacted differently. One man flew into a frenzy, smashing the vox set with a pipe, as if destroying it would somehow undo the message. Another sank to his knees, just muttering prayers for deliverance, maybe hoping the Emperor might intervene directly since his servants had damned us. Old Sanette, the devout woman. She just closed her eyes and bowed her head. Strangely, she looked almost relieved. Perhaps after what she had witnessed, the thought of a swift, merciful end was a blessing. I couldn't tell. Me? I went cold. All my anger drained away into a hollow acceptance. My mind quipped sardonically that at least this would solve the chaos problem. A dark joke, but reality in the Imperium is often darkly ironic, isn't it? We endure unimaginable hardships to keep the wheels turning, and if something goes wrong, they'd rather break the whole machine and build anew than bother saving the cogs. It was at that moment I realized I might die without ever seeing a sunrise or breathing fresh air. That might sound trivial, given everything, but the thought hit me hard. Born in the hive, live in the hive, die in the hive. And die not even at the claws of the heretics, but at the hands of our own protectors. The Emperor's mercy, delivered by orbital bombardment. We debated, briefly, what to do. Perhaps debate is too generous a word. It was more a collection of panicked ideas. Some wanted to try for the spaceport, thinking maybe a shuttle remained to escape. But the spaceport was in the upper hive, heavily guarded, and likely already overrun or on lockdown. And even if one got there without clearance or a pilot, where would you fly? The Inquisition's fleet in orbit would probably shoot down any craft attempting to leave. Others thought of hiding in underground shelters or deep in the sump, as if you could ride out an exterminatus, like a passing storm. I didn't know much about exterminatus methods then, but I suspected it wouldn't matter. No corner of the planet would be safe. Sanet suggested we all go to the central shrine to die praying. Better to meet the Emperor in death with his name on our lips, she said. I admired her devotion, but I wasn't feeling particularly pious right then. In truth, I wasn't sure what I felt. Numb, yes, but also a kind of absurd defiance sparked in me. If I'm going to die, at least let me see it coming, I thought. Morbid curiosity, perhaps. Or maybe I just refused to die cowering in a basement. In the end, our group splintered. Some went with Sinet toward the shrine. Others ran off, perhaps still clinging to that slim hope of escape. I didn't stop them. In those final hours, each person coped in their own way. As for me, I decided to return to my hab block. It was a foolish plan in some ways. That area had become very unsafe. But I had this notion that if this was my last day alive, I wanted to spend it in the only home I ever knew, flimsy and shabby as it was. Also, climbing back up a few levels to my hab gave me something to do other than sit and wait for death. Action, however pointless, felt better than inaction. The journey up Hive was surreal. By then, the Hive had fallen eerily quiet in many sections. Oh, battle still raged in pockets. I skirted around at least one firefight, keeping to the shadows of maintenance tunnels. But many areas were just empty. Corpses and rubble littered the corridors, bloodstains smeared on walls, a few small fires crackling where they'd been left unattended. But living people were scarce. Whether they were all dead or hiding deep, I couldn't say. The silence was broken only by the distant thuds of explosions and the crackle of failing power conduits. As I climbed a zigzag of staircases and squeezed through a half-collapsed passage, I noticed a constant high-pitched sound at the edge of my hearing. At first, I thought it was more Vox interference, but it persisted. Only later did I realize it was the keening of wind. The Hive's vast ventilation systems were failing in places, and an unnatural breeze blew through the halls, carrying a faint chemical smell. In hindsight, that was one of the first signs of what was coming, though I didn't grasp it at the time. I passed by a broken Pict screen in a plaza, still flickering with the last emergency broadcast that had been looped for days. On it, the planetary governor's pre-recorded image urged citizens to remain calm and shelter in place, and assured that relief forces were responding. By now, that message was an obvious lie, or at best, a cruel joke. Relief? No, only punishment was coming. The pic screen sparked and died as I walked by, leaving the plaza in gloom once more. Eventually, I reached the hab block where my quarters were. Miraculously, the structure still stood, though the main entrance was blasted open. Inside, the hall was dark. Power had failed. I navigated by the orange glow of emergency lumens and the flicker of distant fires through the building's narrow windows. Climbing the stairwell to my floor, I stepped over more bodies, some I recognized as neighbors. It looked like they'd been gunned down trying to flee. I tried not to look closely, but one figure I had to move past was old Magda, the washerwoman who scrubbed clothes in the corridor for spare credits. Her kindly face was now a rictus of pain, eyes staring at nothing. I whispered a dull apology as I carefully moved her aside to climb past. A pointless courtesy to the dead, but you hang on to shreds of decency where you can. Back in my hab unit, I shut the door and slid the manual bolt, as if that did anything. The familiar stale smell hit me, and I nearly broke down right there. Everything was exactly as I'd left it. The unmade cot, the half-eaten ration bar on the shelf, my grease-stained coveralls draped over a chair. Life, frozen in time by catastrophe. I sank onto my cot and just sat in the dimness, listening to my own breathing. Strangely, what came to mind then were trivial regrets. I stared at that half-eaten ration bar and thought, I should have savored that more, maybe gotten a different flavor when I had the chance. I picked up a tattered book, an old collection of imperial poetry I'd bartered for years ago, and regretted never finishing it. Little things. It's absurd what your brain chooses to fixate on when facing death. I guess it's easier than fully comprehending the bigger picture, that in a short time nothing of me or this will remain. Time dragged on. I honestly can't say how long I sat there. It might have been minutes or hours. My mind wandered in and out of half-dreams and stray memories, while distant echoes of destruction rumbled through the hive. At some point, I realized the background noises had changed. The gunfire and explosions had subsided significantly. Instead, there was a new sound, a low, almost sub-audible rumble, like deep thunder or a heavy engine far away. It came at irregular intervals, and with each I felt a slight vibration through the floor. Something was happening, something different from before. I unbolted my door and stepped out onto the narrow balcony that ran along the exterior of the Habstack. From there, I had a small view of a slice of the hive and the grimy sky beyond. What I saw made my blood run cold. High above the hive spires, streaks of light were descending, dozens of them, maybe more. Like falling stars trailing through the murk, they were coming down all across the horizon. At first, I dared hope it was finally some kind of imperial reinforcement, maybe drop pods or precise bombardments on the enemy. But these were too many, and none landed with the localized punch of a targeted strike. No, these were spreading out, falling everywhere. A series of distant thumps followed, reverberating through the air and the ground. The sound of massive impacts, though strangely muffled at my distance. Shortly after, I noticed the air itself was changing. The chemical smell I'd sensed earlier grew stronger, a cloying, sweet rot odor. And a wind picked up, an unnatural gust blowing from the directions those fireballs had fallen. It wasn't a comforting breeze. It was hot and carried a fine mist, faintly greenish when I held my hand out to look. I wasn't naive anymore. This was it. The beginning of the end. If the Inquisitor's announcement hadn't convinced me, this spectacle removed all doubt. The exterminatus had begun in earnest. I retreated inside as I saw a haze rolling through the streets far below, creeping upward. I'd heard tales of a terrible weapon, a virus bomb, perhaps, a manufactured plague that devours all life and then ignites the atmosphere itself. On instinct, I grabbed a rag and pressed it over my mouth and nose. Maybe futile, but reflex is reflex. I wasn't sure how fast it would work. Part of me hoped it might be a mercifully quick poison. But mercy wasn't something we'd been granted much of lately. Minutes ticked by. An uncanny stillness fell over the hive, that tense silence that comes before a storm. The mist outside thickened, swirling past the balcony. I could hear a faint hissing sound, like a distant rain, except it wasn't rain. It was the sound of death, though I had no proper name for it then, doing its work. It happened so fast, and yet in those moments time felt drawn out and hyper-real. I peered through a crack in my hab's window shutter. Below, the streets that had once teemed with people were now obscured by a rolling cloud. I glimpsed figures running in that greenish fog. Some stumbled and fell, not to rise again. One man emerged from the haze briefly, maybe 20 floors down, staggering on a balcony akin to mine. Even from that distance, I saw his skin blackening, his movements frantic as he clawed at his throat. He let out a choking scream that echoed faintly up the hive's concrete canyons. Then he collapsed, and the mist swirled over him like a hungry beast, hiding the body. I stumbled back, heart hammering. Though my window was closed, I could already smell the rot intensifying inside. My eyes started watering, throat burning despite the rag pressed to my face. I coughed hard, a deep, racking cough that brought up something wet and red. Blood. my blood. I knew then that the poison, the Life Eater, the whatever it was, had seeped in, perhaps through the vents, or just insinuating through cracks in the old structure. The howling outside grew, not animal cries, but the wind itself carrying a chorus of distant agonies from all across the hive. Imagine millions of people crying out at once in pain and despair, a sound no words can adequately capture. It rose to a terrifying pitch, and then, gradually, it faded as those voices were silenced, snuffed out one by one. My own agony was mounting, a fever like I've never felt, and a pain deep in my gut as if my insides were boiling. I collapsed onto the floor, limbs convulsing. My skin felt like it was on fire. I clawed at my arms and watched sheets of skin slough off under my nails, like old paint peeling from a wall. The sight should have horrified me beyond reason, but by this point I was beyond such feelings. I think I laughed, or perhaps just gasped, at the sheer grotesque absurdity. My body was literally coming apart, liquefying, and all I could think was, "So this is how I die." I won't pretend I faced it with grace. I screamed. Sarcasm and stoicism only carry you so far when your flesh is dissolving. The pain, Emperor's mercy, the pain was indescribable. Every nerve aflame, every cell bursting inside me. My vision swam red as capillaries in my eyes ruptured. Somewhere amid that excruciating torment, I found the presence of mind to crawl, dragging myself toward the door. Why? I'm not sure. Maybe some instinct not to die alone in a corner. Maybe I just wanted to feel open air one last time, even if it was poisoned. I managed to claw the door open and tumble out onto the exterior balcony again. My legs barely worked. I had to pull myself by my elbows, leaving a smear of bloody sludge behind me. I must have looked like some horror from a nightmare by then. Skin hanging in tatters, half blind, coughing out pieces of lung. But I was strangely beyond fear. Shock or the nearness of death had dulled my mind into a detached resignation, the promised merciful numbness finally catching up, just when I was too far gone to appreciate it. Lying on my back on that balcony, I found myself staring upward. The greenish mist was thinning, oddly. High above, I could see patches of the sky, the real sky, through a gap in the hive's towering structures. It was dark, perhaps night or just the perpetual smog, but I saw stars, tiny cold stars far beyond, unfazed by our little tragedy below. And there was something else, a growing brightness, a light expanding across the heavens like a second dawn. I realized what it was with a kind of distant acceptance. The atmosphere was igniting, the final stage of our annihilation. The virus's byproduct gases, or perhaps some direct weapon from the fleet, had set the very air on fire. It started at the horizon, a line of brilliance that swiftly swept upward, turning the clouds to golden flame. Beautiful, I remember thinking. Terrible, but beautiful. Like the Emperor's wrath made manifest, consuming all in judgment. I knew I had only seconds left. The fiery glow raced across the sky, filling my dim world with blinding light. The very air was turning to fire, a wave of pure heat and destruction roaring down through the hive spires towards me. In that final moment, an odd calm settled over me. The pain was gone. Maybe my nerves had all died, or maybe my brain, mercifully, was shutting down. I thought of Sennette and her prayers, and in a cracked, wet whisper I found myself speaking, "Emperor, if you can hear me, well, you'll have a lot of souls coming your way now. Good souls and bad alike. I don't know if I was devout enough or worthy, but, ah, hell." I coughed a laugh or a death rattle, who can say? "Emperor, protect who you can, and forgive us if you can't." Those were my last words, or near enough. I'd like to think there was a sliver of wry humor in there, but mostly it was a final, pathetic plea that perhaps something beyond this world still cared. Then came the white heat. A wall of fire and force hit me like a supernova at ground level. I didn't hear it so much as feel it, a sudden blast of unimaginable light and warmth. My failing eyes saw nothing but blank white. My skin, what little remained, charred away in an instant. There was no time to scream. In that split second, I felt myself, every molecule of my being, flash into vapor. If death is a single moment, that was it, and it was mercifully swift at the end. So here I am, a life extinguished among uncountable others, another statistic in the Inquisitor's log of a successful exterminatus. We, the entire populace of our hive world, are now nothing but ash drifting through a scorched silence, cleansed of life by utter annihilation. From the perspective of the mighty Imperium, it's as if we never existed. Some scribner will mark our planet as purged in the annals. A cautionary tale, perhaps. The warships will depart, the galaxy will move on, and one day new colonists may come to rebuild atop our bones. That's the way of things. But remember this, whoever you are hearing my story. Inside the grand tales of heroes and wars, of inquisitors and demons, there were people, ordinary people like me, who lived and laughed and struggled in those final days. People who had names and hopes, now reduced to less than memory. We saw the end from the gutter's eye view, and in our last moments we were terrified and angry and strangely awestruck all at once. If there's any justice, perhaps our souls found some peace in the Emperor's light after all. Or perhaps, more fittingly, we are just gone, and the only meaning to be found is what you take from our fate. This was Exterminatus, as seen through the eyes of a mere man, short and brutal, like ripping off a bandage to sear a gangrenous wound. Effective? Yes. Necessary? Arguably. But righteous? I leave that to whatever cosmic judge cares to weigh such things. As for me, I'll end my story here. The final dawn has come and gone. The hive is silent. My part in this eternal war, a voiceless extra in the grand production, is over. I find, oddly, that I am not afraid anymore. The worst has happened, and in its wake there's a peaceful sort of nothing. In this last fleeting instant of awareness, I imagine the hive as it once was, full of life and clamor, and then I imagine it as it is now. A tomb, quiet and still. From dust we came, and to dust we have returned, in the Emperor's name. Goodbye, world. Emperor, have mercy on us, for no one else ever did. And if by some miracle this tale survives, remember us. Remember our end.